Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, this is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you back, so glad to be back, after being kidnapped and taken to a work plantation. Was it a plantation? A slave labor camp. Been in a slave labor camp for, I don't know, the past month or so. Doing a remodel, which I don't recommend to anyone. Physical labor, my wife and I. Did I say my wife? I meant my extremely attractive audio engineer. Physical labor, a relationship killer. That's right. We avoid physical labor as much as we can, but we've had to do a lot of it over the past 3 weeks. And we've also been working feverishly to gather signatures for the personhood effort here in Colorado. And between that and work and the remodel and the tile and the carpet and the cleaning and, well, I haven't been able to do the show because, well, there's just been too much going on. But we're back. Right, we don't have time. I appreciate it, boys. Yes, I do. Thank you very much. We are back. It's the Weekly Worldview and all that. There's been so much going on since I last talked to you in the spring, and now it's summer and it's 100 degrees. What did we miss? Well, we missed the rash of drug-crazed cannibals. Remember that? That was all the rage for quite some time. And then, of course, the White House leak scandal, Barry Ho. And his MO and all their minions leaking all the classified information. That could turn out to be quite significant. Fast and Furious, of course, that's reaching ahead. It's coming to a head there as they get ready to cite Barry Ho, contempt of Congress and all that. Executive privilege and the whole thing. It's like 1970, when was Nixon's, 74 was it? It's like 1974 all over again. Really weird. Except, of course, that Barry Ho is Jimmy Carter. So in that respect, it's like 1980 all over again. But so we've had all that. I have to make a bold prediction, of course. I want to open with a bold prediction. On the Supreme Court ruling coming up regarding Obamacare, my bold prediction is, do we have a drum roll? We don't have a drum roll. We don't need a drum roll. My bold prediction is that the Supreme Court will strike down the individual mandate, but it will uphold the rest of Obamacare. Why? Because the Supreme Court is a bunch of liberals. That's why. Whose fault is it? It's our fault. It's your fault. It's my fault. It's the fault of the people. It's the fault of the church. We've trained the Supreme Court and other judges and lawyers to be a bunch of liberals, and that's what they are. And so that's what they will do. And Barry Ho will move on and say, well, that's fine. We still have Obamacare. There's just no funding mechanism. But when has that ever bothered Barry? No funding mechanism. Well, that certainly won't matter. Yes. They'll definitely keep the pre-existing conditions. Yes, they will. Because they're a bunch of liberal socialists. That's why. Yes, Alito, Thomas, Scalia. Who's the other alleged conservative? I can't even remember. They're all a bunch of liberals. And we can't expect them to do the right thing. And frankly, we all need to take some responsibility for it. And in fact, that leads me to the first story of the week. And this might be from last week. Some of these stories might be from a month ago that I've got in my stack. I tried to pick the cream of the crop of the stories that I've picked through. I have been taking down stories, and I have been preparing to do the show, but, it just hasn't happened. All right? But it's happening now, so you should consider yourself lucky and blessed. Lucky or blessed, whichever you like, that the Worldview is back on the air. I want to go to a story from the Weekly Standard. A politician is retiring. This one congressman, his name is Gary Ackerman. He's a Democrat from New York. He's retiring from Congress after 30 years. Now, let's do the math, boys and girls. If we go back 30 years, believe it or not, that would be 1982. That would be 30 years ago. Yeah. Tell me, that would be 1982. He said, well, there's an interview. I forget who's interviewing him here. Bloomberg News interviewed this Gary Ackerman, who, until I read the story, I never heard of the guy. But they asked him a question. They say, Congressman Ackerman, you've been here in D.C. for 30 years. Can you define comedy as it existed when you arrived versus how it exists now? Now, comedy, not comedy as in C-O-M-E-D-Y. Comedy as in C-O-M-I-T-Y. You know, can't we all just get along? That whole thing. Yeah, oh, and by the way, if you want to hear a brilliant analysis of the seminal phrase that was uttered by, what was his name, Larry King? Jerry King? Who was the guy who got beat up before the L.A. riots? He was recently found at the bottom of his... Rodney King. If you want to hear a brilliant analysis of Rodney King, you can go to KGOV.com. I was on the radio here in Denver earlier, early in the week last week. I forget what day exactly. I think it was Tuesday last week. Go find that show, download it, listen to it. A brilliant analysis of Rodney King's rather brain-dead question. Can't we all just get along? Yeah. But anyway, they asked Congressman Ackerman about comedy in Washington, D.C., and he says, well, your premise is that comedy exists now, and it may not be entirely accurate. And then he goes on to say some other fairly mundane things. And then he says, society has changed. The public is to blame as well. I think the people have gotten dumber, unquote. That's what Congressman Ackerman said. Now, another thing I have not been able to do is listen to much talk radio over the past 3 weeks because I've been in the slave labor camp. They didn't allow us to have radio. No. So I can imagine what all the talking heads, the Limbaughs, the Hannitys, the Levins. Is there anyone I missed? Savage? No, Savage might have actually had an interesting take. But I can tell you what all the Limbots would have said. How dare this Democrat congressman accuse the people of being dumber? And I'm just going to come right out and say it. I agree with Congressman Gary Ackerman that the people have gotten dumber. Yes, it's true, folks. Go out there in the streets on any given day. Just walk around and interact with your fellow human being. They're definitely dumber than they were in 1982. And a lot less civil, I might add. But I want to call out Congressman Ackerman, because while it is true that the people have gotten dumber, Congressman Ackerman, you've been in the government for 30 years. Can't you acknowledge that you're partially responsible for the people getting dumber? Congressman, please. You've had a hand in writing the rules that have governed the schools, the universities, the culture, the music, the movies, entertainment, everything, Congressman Ackerman. You've been at the forefront of stupefying the American populace. So while your observation about the rising level of stupidity in America is absolutely undeniably true, you are at least partially to blame, and I believe more to blame than the average Joe Sixpack on the street or the average soccer mom or hockey mom or whatever it is this year. You are responsible, Congressman. You and your Democrat Party are responsible. Oh, and the Republicans, too. So how about that? All right. Now, I said people are not only more stupid. Now, he said dumber. I prefer the word stupid when I'm talking about stupid people. But people have become a lot less civil as well in dealing with each other. I've got an example here from the Domestic Tranquility File. A woman was waiting for a bus in Modesto, California, when Nicholas Velasquez of Modesto punched her in the face and then walked away saying, "I hate white people." That's according to the police there in Modesto. The woman sustained a black eye and her glasses were broken in the assault. Velasquez was arrested on one count of elder abuse and another count of committing a hate crime. Where's the assault charge? He gave her a black eye, for crying out loud. People have also overcomplicated things. Our justice system has not only become more stupid, but they've complicated things that should be simple. You don't have to charge this guy with elder abuse or a hate crime. Charge him with assault. He punched a woman in the face, for crying out loud. Oh, by the way, the woman, who is unidentified, in the story. The woman was sitting in her motorized wheelchair at the bus stop when she was punched in the eye by this uncivil, stupid product of the government education system, Mr. Velasquez. So there. I know, it's kind of depressing. That's why I have actually breathed a sigh of relief at not having to read the news in such detail every day, because it does get depressing after a while, especially when it comes to crime and justice. A perfect example here. From my justice file, from CNN, a new Louisiana law, are you sitting down, folks? A new Louisiana law requires child predators to state their criminal status on their Facebook page. So if you're a child molester, you have to have that in your profile. By the way, blonde hair, blue eyes, I like classical music. Oh, and by the way, I'm a child molester. So this is a new law proposed by, guess what? A Republican state representative from Bossier City, Louisiana, says his new law will stand up to constitutional challenge because it expands sex offender registration requirements to include disclosure of the convicted criminal's past on their social networking sites.
So if they don't obey them,
if they don't obey, well, you just wait and see what happens if they don't obey. We'll block their Facebook page. How about that? Molest a child, lose your internet access. Welcome to the brave new world of American justice. Anyway, this Republican from Bossier City, Louisiana, he's the father of a 13-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son, and he wants to revoke Facebook privileges for errant child molesters. Is this not proving the earlier congressman's point that people are just dumber than they were 30 years ago? I don't think we registered sex offenders 30 years ago. Well, we did, but we did it in a different manner. We carved their name on a granite stone, and we planted that right above their head. Actually, you probably have to go back 75 years for that. But anyway, just to prove the point that people are getting stupider, a state representative, Jeff Thompson, a Republican, confused, stupid Republican from Bossier City, Louisiana. Thank you very much, Mr. State Rep. Your career ends here. Please, I hope you save some money. Have a good time. All right. More from the justice file. And I don't want to hammer away on the point that people are stupid, because I know at least a half a dozen people in my immediate sphere of influence and circle of friends who I consider intelligent and not stupid in any way. But pretty much everyone else, I mean, I classify them. And you know who you are, okay? And now there are thousands of people in my audience who I consider brilliant, by the way. Anyway, let's stick with the justice file. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a story from the Deseret News, which is in Utah. The mother of a 13-year-old girl says a juvenile court judge told her that, let me just read you the story. Valerie Bruno, her daughter, Caitlin, was referred to the 7th District Juvenile Judge in the juvenile court back in March for an allegation of assault. Apparently, Caitlin, the little brat daughter, and a friend of hers cut several inches of hair from a 3-year-old girl's head at a McDonald's. And they did it with malice aforethought. They weren't just playing around. They both took a turn once they secured some scissors from a dollar store across the street. They both took a turn cutting some of the little girl's hair off the back of her head. So at a hearing back in May, this little brat entered admissions in the assault case, as well as another case she was involved in, stemming from an 8-month pattern and series of phone calls she made to another teenager in Colorado that included threats of rape and mutilation. So this is a fine young lady right here. Perfect, perfect example of a product of your government education system. She's hacking off the hair of a 3-year-old at McDonald's, threatening another teenager in Colorado over the phone with threats of rape and mutilation. Well, the judge in the haircutting case called the girl's behavior egregious. He ordered her to serve 30 days in detention, pay restitution to her victims, and serve 276 hours of community service. Tell me that's not the stupidest thing you've ever heard. What this girl needed was a good whipping, is what she needed. Ah, that's, and now we get to the point. My extremely attractive audio engineer comments that she needs to have her head shaved. Well, so the judge offered the brat's mom a deal. He said, I'll cut her community service by 150 hours if you want to cut her hair right now. And the mom is like, what, me? Now cut her hair? And the judge says, yeah, we'll get some scissors. We'll whack off her ponytail. Right? Well, the mom did it, but now she's talked to some lawyers. And the lawyers have told her that she probably was taken advantage of. She says she wishes now she hadn't taken the judge up on his offer. Here's what she says, folks. Quote, I guess I should have went into the courtroom knowing my rights because I felt very intimidated. I mean, this is like an eye for an eye. And that's not how you teach kids right from wrong. Unquote.
How old is this?
I don't. It doesn't say how old the mother is, but I added the yes,
okay.
I'm sorry. Anyway, an eye for an eye, that's not how we teach kids right from wrong. I'm thinking, hey, Mom, have you ever read the Bible? That's exactly how God taught people right from wrong. Yeah, there's even a verse in the Bible. The law is a tutor to lead men to Christ. People need to be taught about justice. They need to be taught about an eye for an eye. In fact, that's the way God did it. And so another stupid person rears their ugly head. Here at the Weekly Worldview. Now, speaking of stupid people, let me skip over a couple stories here. Because I want to get right to this Hillary Clinton story. Hillary Clinton, now this might be from a month ago for crying out loud. It is. It's from May 19th, but I couldn't resist. Hillary Clinton reflected on her years as Secretary of State. Just sends a chill up and down my spine to imagine that Hillary Clinton has actually been steering the ship of state here in America for the past 3.5 years. This is a story from Newsmax. Hillary Clinton is nearing the end of her tenure as President Obama's Secretary of State. When asked to comment on the ups and downs and the ins and outs and the intrigue and all that goes with the incredible responsibility of being the Secretary of State of the most powerful nation on the surface of the planet, Hillary actually said this. You know the old Woody Allen adage, 90% of it is just showing up. That's what Hillary said about her years as Secretary of State. What else? I may look like the bionic woman on the outside, but this is a very intense experience. It's a 24/7 job. Hill, trust me, you don't look like the bionic woman on the outside. In fact, you look every minute of the 24 hours, 7 days a week you've spent at the helm of the ship of state. You wear every minute of it, Hill. It shows right through. She concludes by saying that she's looking forward to taking some time off, writing, giving speeches, and philanthropy, and quite possibly helping to counsel her firstborn daughter through her first abortion. Welcome back, folks, to Weekly Worldview. Thank you for the boys, from the boys, out at Disneyland After Dark. That goes out to Sam and Gunda in Germany by special request. Sam and Gunda, if you ever make it over here to the United States, come on over to the McBurney compound. We'll listen to the whole album. It'll be great. Sam and Gunda. Yeah, Sam and Gunda is his wife. Yes. Yeah, did I not mention that? I'm assuming that's the case. I got one of the thousands of emails that pour in here to the Weekly Worldview every week. Sam and Gunda requested that, and I got to give the people what they want. Besides, I dig that song, and like that. All right, so we did Hillary reflecting. Okay, so while Hillary is reflecting and genuflecting and planning to take some time off, talking about how she's the bionic woman, talking about how she feels like Woody Allen, all of that, here's what's going on as the ship of state nears the tip of many icebergs. U.S. Agency for International Development, according to WorldNet Daily, they've launched a program titled Project Peace. Yes, Project Peace. It's an acronym, as you can well imagine. You know, government agencies, and I think there are certain bureaucrats who are hired just to come up with acronyms. There's a department of acronyms probably within the U.S. Agency for International Development, and they've called this one Project Peace. The acronym stands for Programming Effectively Against Conflict and Extremism. That's what I said. Programming effectively against conflict and extremism. Excuse me, AID, George Orwell called and he wants his acronym back. Okay? Yes, against conflict and extremism. Now, Peace will hire contractors to help the agency analyze the true causes of conflict and the cost of these conflicts. Now, the initiative is initially going to be funded with a mere $600 million. The unveiling of Peace comes amidst the slaughter of Nigerian Christians. Yes, they've as they were on the stage chanting the acronym, anachronism? Did I almost say anachronism? Anyway, I meant acronym. As they were chanting, as they were crying, peace, peace, churches were exploding in Nigeria. Now, a director of a non-governmental organization, Patrick Sukedo, I probably can't pronounce this right, Patrick Sukedo, he's the international director for the Barnabas Fund. He said the simple act of going to church on a Sunday in Nigeria has become perilous for Christians. Yeah, indeed. Nigerian media have reported that the Muslim jihadist group Boko Haram has pledged to eradicate Christianity from the continent of Africa, starting in Nigeria. Now, the USAID, these are the people who came up with peace. They're shouting, they're crying, peace, peace. The USAID documents, however, contend that Boko Haram simply shares with other groups anger over the nation's poor governance. And they simply want to improve state service capacities and reduce anger and resultant conflicts. That's what Boko Haram actually wants. And they make their point by blowing up Christian churches. So the $600 million with which you and I have funded the Project Peace says that Boko Haram is not necessarily Islamist. And maybe they said eradicate Christianity, but, you know, it depends on what your definition of eradicate is. That could mean we want lower water rates and more reliable electricity. That could be what it means. All right. Do I have a line here from let's go through the agency. The agency, that's the AID, the Agency for International Development, says specific to Nigeria, it dismisses the religious element of the hostility. That's Boko Haram blowing up Christian churches. they say, although the symptom of conflict is intercommunal violence along sectarian lines, the source of the conflict will not be found in theology. Rather, the conflict's source is competition for land between a group that perceives itself as indigenous and another seen as more recent settlers. That's what it's all about. It's just nothing to see here, ladies and gentlemen. Just keep walking. There's no there's no religious violence here. According to the USAID, Those who perceive the conflict as a religious war have been unable to gain traction in resolving the conflict because at its root, it's more about governance of contested resources. It's not at all about Muslims wanting to blow up Christians. Let's go to Kaduna, Nigeria, a report from the Church Report this week. Suicide bombers killed 21 people in attacks on three churches in Nigeria during last Sunday's services, exacerbating religious tensions. In a West African nation that is almost evenly divided between Muslims and Christians, it was the third Sunday in a row that deadly attacks have been carried out against Christian churches. Again, finally, in the third paragraph, they mention the Islamist Boko Haram terrorist organization. More than 560 people have been killed in violence blamed on Boko Haram just this year alone. The Boko Haram group's intention in bombing the churches, according to observers, is to attract reprisal attacks from the Christians and draw the battle lines between Muslims and Christians. But, of course, Project Peace says that's not true at all. They just want more reliable garbage collection services and better surveying of the local farmland. Yeah. I think USAID is under the Department of State, which is under the Department of Hillary Rodham Clinton, under the directorship of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Meanwhile, while Hillary Clinton has been touring the world, ginning up the Arab Spring, here, according to Reuters, during talks in Baghdad a few weeks ago, six world powers failed to convince Iran to scale back its uranium enrichment program. Now they're planning to meet again in Moscow this month, and the Institute for Science and International Security, which is a think tank, whatever that is, which tracks Iran's nuclear weapons program, they say that Iran has enough low-enriched uranium for at least five nuclear weapons if refined much further. Hillary, did someone get a memo to her on this? Yeah. Oh, and one more thing from the Hillary file. This is from the Telegraph in London. Hillary Clinton, the U.S. Secretary of State, has bluntly criticized Russia's continued backing for President Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria. So she's upset with the Russians over Syria. Ms. Clinton has urged Russia to use its... Did I say Ms. Clinton? I meant Mrs. Clinton. I apologize, Bill. Didn't mean to leave you out there. Mrs. Clinton has urged Russia to use its influence on Mr. Assad to curb the fighting. So we've got a completely naive idiot as the Secretary of State. She's upset with the Russians. Uh-oh. Hillary, is that you? Hillary? No, is that Bill? Oh, it's Hillary. She's got the jack. 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 Jack, 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 jack. She's got the jack. I'm sorry if we've offended anyone in the Clinton family. But you know what we think of Hill. Now that threw me off here. I'm not sure where I was going with this story here. What was the point? Oh, leaders of the Free Syrian Army, which is the Muslim rebel movement, have issued a statement giving the regime, they've issued several statements and they keep putting down laying down a deadline for Assad to stop bombing and killing and blowing up and burning them. They wanted him to follow Kofi Annan's plan. Or they said they would formally abandon a ceasefire. Well, that's all passed. All the deadlines have passed. And the war goes on. The war rages on. Another bold prediction, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, well, we've been gone so long, I have to fit two or three bold predictions into this broadcast just to meet my monthly quota. My other bold prediction is that Barry Ho will strike in Syria and Iran before October. That's what I said. He will strike in Syria and Iran before October. Why, might you ask? Well, it's fairly obvious. He's turning into Jimmy Carter. And the last thing he wants to be remembered, he wants to be remembered as America's first great black president. And he doesn't want to be remembered as a complete joke, incompetent, possible criminal. And so he will strike. Will it be enough to have him win the election over the hapless Mitt Romney? Probably it will, yeah. I know it looks bad right now for Barry, what with all the scandals and everything that's enveloping his presidency. But Barry knows one thing. Barry knows that people like it when he kills bad guys. And so Barry Holt will stumble backwards into doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, to preserve his own political legacy. He will strike in Iran, and he will strike in Syria before the fall. Yes, that's right. You probably didn't hear it here first, because it's a fairly obvious option to any observer. But anyway, you heard it here second or third. Anyway, you heard it here. Now, let's go to the Times of Israel. Gaza-based terrorists, this is from today. Gaza-based terrorists fired 25 rockets into southern Israel on Saturday. This is the first I've heard of this. Now, if 25 rockets were fired into Tucson from from Mexico, or fired into Laredo or El Paso, that would be huge news. But this is Israel, where 25 rockets on a given weekend isn't all that big of a deal. It barely makes the news in Israel. The rockets caused damage to a school and a factory. The latest attacks bring the total number of rockets and other projectiles fired from the Gaza Strip to 150 over the past 6 days. Now, you would think that would be big news, but this is the first I've heard of it, and I had to go to the Times of Israel to get it. The good news, Hamas is now seeking a ceasefire. Now, you got to wonder, if Hamas is the one firing all the rockets, they don't really need to seek a ceasefire. They could just cease firing on their own. But this is how they work. They fire a rocket at Israel. Israel blows up some terrorists, and all of a sudden, it's Hamas who's been attacked by Israel. Yeah. Sources in Israel say that Israel has no interest in a major military response to the upsurge in rocket fire. This is according to the Times of Israel. They have no interest in a major military response, given the current sensitivities in the region. You know, all the tensions surrounding the Muslim Brotherhood's ascension into power in Egypt, the ongoing violence in Syria, and the fact that Russian President Vladimir Putin is visiting Israel this very week, which is probably why Hamas is launching all these rockets, because they know they can get away with it. But they haven't killed anyone yet, have they? Let me see here. Well, they put one guy in a hospital. He got shrapnel through his neck. He was in hospital with serious injuries. Iron Dome, Israel's missile defense system, shot down 10 out of approximately 150 projectiles launched into Israel in the past 6 days. Iron Dome's probably not going to get it done. It's a nifty idea. The good news, Israeli airstrikes on Gaza terrorist targets have killed at least 6 Palestinians since Monday. Hence, Hamas is now seeking a ceasefire, because Israel has had the temerity to attack them over the firing of approximately 150 missiles into the southern regions of the country. So, anyway, Hillary, as you ponder taking some time off as Secretary of State, we just want to send a message from here at the Worldview. Please, please consider taking a permanent vacation. It's the Weekly Worldview, and she's a monster. Hillary Clinton, she's the Secretary of State. But let's take a step back from the international stage, ladies and gentlemen, and come back. Come back to America here. I've got a study here from the University of Oregon. But you know what? First, I want to, I've got to make a comment on what happened this morning. We were not invited to the largest Catholic basilica in Denver to gather signatures. But we went there anyways, because there's a public sidewalk. We decided to stand out there and collect signatures. Now, we went on the property of the church, and we were asked by a police officer to leave. He said, "The Monsignor does not want you on the property." I said, "I find that hard to believe. We're trying to change the law in Colorado so that it would better match the philosophy of the Catholic Church, that life begins at conception, that innocent life should be protected. I do not believe the Monsignor said that, and I want to hear it from him directly." So the police officer said, "Well, I can ask him if he wants to see you." I said, "No, I demand that he come right down here. I want to see him." I don't know what happened to me. It's as if I was possessed. Yeah, it's as so anyway, I don't know. I left my kids on the property because the policeman, for some reason, didn't have the nerve to force the kids to leave. And they were just playing in the park and trying to find some shade. It's like 100 degrees out there. Anyway, the Monsignor comes out. I think it was the Monsignor, by the way. I think it was one of his flunkies, like a priest or a deacon. So he comes out with the cop, and he reiterates what the law enforcement officer had said. That here's what he said. He said, "We welcome you to be on the sidewalk." I said, "Listen, Father, this isn't a Soviet Union. You don't have to welcome me to be on the public sidewalk. In fact, you can't make me leave the public sidewalk." I said, "What I have a problem with is that you don't invite us into your church and make an announcement specifically about the personhood campaign in Colorado and encourage your parishioners to sign the petition. You, sir, are derelict in your duty." And then I started to get really hard on him. And then I just went off. And at one point I told him, I said, "Listen, Father, the day your church stands up and says that abortion must end in America, that's the day it ends." And I screamed at the top of my lungs as he ran away, giving himself the sign of the cross as if I was a demon about to invade his very person. I'm serious. It was like a scene out of that movie. El Diablo, he's giving himself the sign of the cross. And I said, "You can end abortion when your church stands up and says it's over." I said, "Stand up and do something about it." And he was literally rushed into the church, crossing himself by the cop. Anyway, so my other personhood friends, they asked me very kindly to just please leave. They said, "Doug, you know what? You're out of control." And I said, "Yeah, well, I'm glad I said it to him." I said, I'm probably the first Christian with some guts who's confronted this puke, and it's the first time he's probably grabbed his own midsection and realized that he doesn't have any. So anyway, I'm glad I rebuked this priest or flunky deacon or whatever he was. He had the robes and the hat. You know, I don't know what he was. Anyway, and for all my Catholic brothers and sisters, I love you guys. I work with you people. And I respect you, and I know so many of you are faithful Christians and you love the Lord, but your leadership is dead. Your leadership is responsible for people being killed because they are simply laying down silent, cowering in fear to the abortion lobby that the Catholic Church could crush like a pimple if they stood up. So I don't want to offend my Catholic brothers and sisters, but I absolutely wanted to offend this priest or deacon or whatever he was, who would not welcome us onto the, not even on the property of his church. I was extremely irate. So I got in the car and I got my extremely attractive audio engineer and my three daughters. And I said, "Look, it's almost noon. The Protestants are about to let out. We're going to stop at the first Protestant church we find." What we found was a relatively small black church in Denver, just east of Cherry Creek North. And we happened to see that the parking lot was full and the doors were open. People were starting to come out. So we pulled into the parking lot, grabbed our personhood petitions, and just walked up to the front stairs. And I said to my extremely attractive audio engineer, as we were approaching the front of the building, I said, I really want to see how this pastor reacts. Because if someone showed up at our church, let me give you an example. Let's say there was a petition in Colorado to change the law that all child molesters, convicted child molesters, be executed. Let's say that there was a petition drive for that, and for some reason our church, Denver Bible Church, we weren't aware of it. But some of the petitioners just showed up at our church on a given Sunday morning with their petitions. And they showed us, they said, we're trying to change the law. Well, our pastor would stop church. He would invite them in, let them speak their piece, and encourage everyone to sign the petition. And so I told my extremely attractive audio engineer, I said, if this pastor reacts any differently, I'm just in a mood that I'm going to rebuke him. Well, folks, this small black church, Word Up Life Church, right? Word Up Life Church. Well, they started signing the petition immediately. Every person who walked out was signing the petition. After a few minutes, like I say, it's 100 degrees. One of the deacons invited us into the lobby, into the air conditioning, took me up, introduced me to the pastor's wife, who heard my spiel, and she signed the petition. And then my extremely attractive audio engineer collected the signature of the bishop there. So we got the bishop and the pastor and just about every single person in the flock. So my faith, and then they said, hey, there's another church up the street. They let out in about an hour. You should go up there. So we went up there and we got some more signatures. Now that minister was a little less comfortable, but he didn't have the nerve to ask us to leave. Being pro-life signature gatherers, peaceful volunteers out on a hot summer day, so he let us stand outside in the shade. And he let us gather signatures from the people there. So my faith in religion and humanity was somewhat restored. A little bit. Yeah, we had some pro-choice people. But they signed it because they were at church and they felt really nervous. And we'll take that, okay? Anyway, we have a lot of fun out there. And it's not always... It's not always a rancorous confrontation. We have a lot of good conversations. We have a lot of people ask questions about the most important things in life, and we have good conversations. But I like to report to you the exciting stuff. Like me convincing a Catholic priest that I'm a demon who's about to just jump on him and eat his hat or something. That guy was...
He didn't see you laying the carpet yet.
Oh, that's it. If that priest ever saw me laying carpet, he would know that I do have the capability to go absolutely animal ballistic on somebody. Anyway, for anyone out there in the audience who lays carpet, I have a newfound respect for you. And if I do need carpet again, please send me your number because I will hire you. I will not do that again. All right. Now, that's a little off topic. Let's get back to the religion file. This is from the Global Christian Post. There's a new study out of the University of Oregon by a gentleman named Azim Sharif. He's a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. He's published a study in the Public Library of Science Journal. Its key finding is that a nation's rate of belief in hell predicts lower crime rates, but a nation's rate of belief in heaven predicts higher crime rates. Uh-huh. Yeah, so basically, people who think there's a God of justice who will judge them and send them to hell, they tend to not commit as many crimes. But if the people of a nation believe that there's an all-forgiving God who loves them, well, they'll commit more crimes. Yeah, I know. In a companion study published last year, Sharif wrote that undergraduate students at the University of Oregon were more likely to cheat on a test if they believed in a forgiving God. Well, God will forgive me. I'm going to cheat, right? This is what the church has produced, ladies and gentlemen, over the past couple of generations, because Jesus loves everybody and forgives everybody, and these preachers forget to tell people about the law. The law is the tutor that leads men to Christ. This actually cross-links with the story I did earlier, does it not? What story did I do? Eye for an eye, the woman who wanted to cut off the ponytail. You know, God's not just a God of love. I mean, if God was just a God of love, why does he have hell? That's horrible and awful, and he's going to send all those people there. He's a God of justice and a God of love. But people need to understand the justice first. It'll keep the unwashed heathens from committing crimes, and it'll help bring them to the grace of God through Jesus Christ. But we need to emphasize the justice a little bit more in our daily religious lives, ladies and gentlemen, because we're misleading young, stupid people. We've already established that, you know, people born after 1982 are inherently likely to be more stupid than those of us pre-1982. And not through any fault of their own. It's the whole culture's fault. I take responsibility. You should too. So we already know they're stupid. And if we tell them that Jesus loves you no matter what, well, then no matter what is going to happen. Anyway, another study. Oh, no, this isn't a study. This is from the Science, really, file. Professor Patrick Pulisino, the British National Health Service, he says, doctors have turned the use of a controversial death pathway, I said death pathway, into the equivalent of euthanasia on the elderly. He claims that there was often a lack of clear evidence for initiating what's called the Liverpool Care Pathway. Yes, the Liverpool Pathway. It's a method of looking after terminally ill patients that's used in hospitals across Great Britain. It's called the Liverpool Care Pathway. Now, it's designed to come into force when doctors believe it's impossible for a patient to recover and that death is imminent. It can include withdrawal of treatment, including withdrawing the provision of water and nourishment by a feeding tube, and on average, brings a patient to death within 33 hours. That's the Liverpool Care Pathway. Professor Pulicino claimed that far too often elderly patients who could live longer are placed on the Liverpool Care Pathway, and it had now become an assisted death pathway rather than a care pathway. Yeah. Now, a Department of Health spokesman says the Liverpool Care Pathway is not euthanasia. He says a patient's condition is monitored at least every 4 hours, and if a patient improves, they are taken off the Liverpool pathway and given whatever treatments best suit their new needs. So the question is, who do you believe? This professor, who's intimately familiar with the National Health Service, he says that it's quite possible that the National Health Service in Britain kills off 130,000 elderly patients every year, contrary to the actual regulations written in the Liverpool Care Pathway. So anyway, the decision on Obamacare coming up here in the next week, it's a big decision. It's going to go badly for civilized human beings because it is going to mean government-managed health care, even more government-managed health care, which is going to mean more euthanasia, more abortions, and more sexually transmitted diseases. Yeah, that's what it means. All right. Another one from the Science Really file. From the New York Daily News, nearly half of Americans, 46%, believe God created the human race in a single day. About 10,000 years ago. The poll revealed that Americans' ideas about the origin of mankind have remained virtually unchanged in the 30 years that Gallup has surveyed on the topic. So score this one in the column for those of you who might think that people have not gotten stupider over the past 30 years. Gallup found that those with postgraduate degrees... Did I say postgraduate's degrees? I did. That's because I never got no schooling. I never went to college. I barely made out of high school. Gallup found that those with postgraduate degrees were the least likely to believe in creationism. But among groups with less education, the creationist viewpoint was the most popular. So this actually means that people with postgraduate educations tend to be stupider than people like me who barely made it out of high school. Now, the professor noted that the belief in creationism that almost half of Americans hold today, he says it's, quote, at odds with the preponderance of the scientific literature, unquote. Well, professor, that depends on what your definition of scientific is. Feel like I'm is dragging me, my head's a battery.
It's black and white. We love California.
And so from there, we'll go to New York and the Associated Press. Richard Leakey. Richard Leakey? That's right. Richard Leakey predicts skepticism over evolution will soon be history. He says sometime in the next 15 to 30 years, he expects scientific discoveries will have accelerated to the point that even the skeptics will accept evolution. Leakey recently spent several weeks in New York promoting the Turkana Basin Institute in Kenya. That's the institute where Leakey spends most of his time, thankfully enough. He claims that he's unearthing the origins of mankind in an area rich with fossils. Yes, that's Richard Leakey. Not to be confused with his father, Louis Leakey, for whom I was whipped in eighth grade by my science teacher because I laughed at the idea that Louis Leakey had discovered. I forget what it was. It was the latest missing link circa 1982, I guess. Anyway, Louis Leakey had discovered whatever. Anyway, I got into an argument with my science teacher, which back then in Texas, they could spank you if you got out of line. And I got out of line, I must confess. And I said something like, I think his head is leaky. And the class laughed, and I got three licks. Leakey began, this particular Richard Leakey. Richard Leakey began his work searching for fossils in the mid-1960s. Oh, maybe this is the actual guy. I thought it was his dad. Anyway, Leakey claims to have unearthed much of the existing fossil evidence for human evolution. So here's a guy who's built up a career for almost 60 years, and he's got nothing. There is no fossil evidence for human evolution. Even the evolutionists admit it. But Louis Leakey has secured grant after grant. I'm sorry, Richard Leakey has somehow bamboozled the scientific community and received grant after grant since the 1960s. And now claims he's unearthed much of the existing fossil evidence for human evolution. Leakey says extinction is always driven by environmental change. Environmental change is always driven by climate change. Man accelerated, if not created, planet change phenomena. I think we have to recognize that the future is by no means a very rosy one. And Mr. Leakey, I would agree. For you, the future is not rosy. On Judgment Day, you're going to be very embarrassed. And if they do discover Noah's Ark, if that were to happen, but I've been having this debate with some friends of mine about what would happen if we actually found Noah's Ark, and it was undisputable, irrefutable evidence that it was Noah's Ark. I mean, so you'd find Shem, Hem, and Japheth, you know, scratch their names into the beams, you know, dates and times. Completely irrefutable. They find Noah's Ark, and Mr. Leakey will be thoroughly embarrassed. And on Judgment Day, of course, Mr. Leakey will be, cowering and shaking in fear and in tears as he falls into the hands of the living God, having mocked him and denied him for his entire life, and encouraged other people to do the same. Not a rosy scenario, Mr. Leakey. Let's see here. Now, I think Mr. Leakey, now, if there's anyone on the planet who can cause me to reach for a Bible verse, it's Richard Leakey, or his dad Lewis, or I think his wife too, is some kind of atheistic freak of nature. So they'll almost always cause me to grab a Bible verse. And so we go to the book of Genesis in the 8th chapter. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever dare consider the possibility of even thinking about quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw and adulterated truth is about to be uttered. Mr. Leakey, this is for you. And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma. You see, Noah had come out of the ark, and he had built an altar to the Lord. And he made sacrifices. And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma, and the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake. Although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. Unquote. Mr. Leakey, God said that we will not destroy the earth, and nor shall he, by environmental catastrophe. That while the earth remains, we're still going to be have seed time and harvest, summer, winter, all of that, Mr. Leakey. All right, now I've run out of time. I have all these. I have a stack of probably 100 stories that I simply cannot get to. And so I may save some for next week. Let's see. Let's go with. Here's an encouraging one. From Des Moines, Iowa, a prominent leader in the Iowa-Nebraska branch of the NAACP has announced that he is resigning as branch president and as a national board member in the wake of the NAACP's decision to endorse marriage between homosexual people. That's right. The Right Reverend Keith Ratliff Sr. of the Maple Street Missionary Baptist Church in Des Moines, he might be a liberal, he might be a socialist, but man, you're going to start marrying off queers? I am out of here. All right. So congratulations to the Right Reverend Keith Ratliff Sr., who finally had to draw a line in the sand, and he has resigned. During a State House rally back in March of 2011, Ratliff said his support for traditional marriage was biblically based, adding, this isn't a private interpretation. This isn't Burger King religion. This isn't have it your way religion. Marrying off no quiz. Anyway, and he has resigned, thankfully enough. All right, finally, from the Washington Examiner, two transgendered men are suspected of having robbed a third man at knife point in Washington, D.C. early last Tuesday. A shocking story. Police first reported the crime on their Twitter feed, but later that day, they had to drop the investigation because the man who was robbed did not wish to file a complaint against the two transgendered men who robbed him at knife point. This sounds like an Eddie Murphy scenario. You pick up it's an embarrassed John. He picks up two transsexuals. They rob him at knife point, and he says, "What? I have to. You know what? I'd rather not press any charges if it's okay. Let's just forget the whole thing ever happened." Anyway. That's it for the Worldview, folks. I'll be back with you next week, Lord willing, if I'm not sentenced to another slave labor camp. And I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. That's KGOV.com. I may be on the radio again this week in Denver. You'll have to check KGOV every day to find out if I'm on the radio in Denver. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course, as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly World View Studios. And until next week, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.